Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Pretty good, Adam. What about yourself?
I'm doing well, sir. It's family day here, so it's a bit of an extended weekend. And in the midst of family activities, we have a podcast to put out, and here we are doing that. So it's a good day.
Nothing better than chatting DC.
That's right. Let's start as we always do with some comic book recommendations. How about that?
Yes, I'm dying for that.
All right. What do you got? What have you read?
I haven't read anything in the last couple of weeks, so I'm hauling something out from the drawer, the closet from the past, and going with Batman Year One.
Great book. Yeah.
With Frank Miller. I just love this book. I love the animated movie that goes with it. I thought it stayed pretty close to not only what was the content in the book, but the style, the animated style is very similar to what's in the book. So if you guys don't have time to read this classic book, I suggest you check out the animated movie that goes with it. But if you can do both, I suggest both and reading this beforehand because it, like I said, is a classic.
Right, yeah. Agreed on the book. I mean, it's not one of the first ones I read when I got back into comics. Like, I think the order was Dark Knight Returns. This is what my comic book guy gave me. And then he suggested Kingdom Come. And then eventually, after that, he gave me Year One. But yeah, Year One is a great Batman story. A lot of elements were found in Batman Begins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the artwork is great as well. I mean, the writing by Frank Miller is fantastic, but David Mazzucchelli.
Yeah, I forgot to mention him. Jeez.
His art is just phenomenal. That's a great pull. For my recommendation, I'm going to go something a little bit more recent. And that is, it's a miniseries from Scott Snyder and I don't think it's Greg Capullo. Let me check who's doing the art. I'll quickly pull up the book and see who is on art because I don't want to get it wrong and disservice the artist because the art is, in comics, I believe the art is just as important as the writing. And a lot of emphasis is always put on the writer. So
I would argue that it's probably even more important because you can convey so much with just a picture. You don't even have to add words to it.
Exactly, yeah.
So I would agree with you there.
So Jock is the artist. Scott Snyder is the writer. And it's The Batman Who Laughs. It's a 6-issue miniseries. And basically what it is it's an offshoot from... Remember the miniseries, I'm sure you heard of it, Dark Knight's Metal that Scott Snyder did?
Yes, actually, I haven't read that yet, but when I was on the DC TV Squadcast, there was a name drop of the Red Death,
yes.
Which I think is one of those offshoot comics that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's basically there was, within Dark Knight's Metals, there were like, I think, four one-shots explaining the different, the alternate Batman, that are, the, you know, the evil, quote-unquote, Batman. And it was, you're right, it was the Red Death, I think it was. And then there was an Aquaman version of Batman that was a female version of Batman. And then there was a Green Lantern offshoot. And then there was the Batman Who Laughs. And it's, you know, as the name implies, it's a Batman-Joker sort of amalgam, for lack of a better phrasing. But I don't want to like spoil the story because I want you to read it. And I mean, we might do eventually, if you do read Dark Knight's Metal or this, we'll do a review down the line. But what I can say is, if I think it's better, this miniseries so far, which is 3 issues in, is better than actual Dark Knight's Metal book. And if you like alternate versions of Batman, and you like seeing them interact with each other, and if you like a really dark and twisted absolutely bonkers story, this book is for you. I can't recommend it enough. You never know what's going to happen with this with this story. And that's it always keeps you alert and on your toes. So I recommend it. And for me, Scott Snyder is one of the best writers working in comics. So anything he puts his name on, I'm reading. And I suggest, like I said, if you're a big Batman fan, if you like multiverse versions of Batman, and if you enjoyed Dark Knight Metal, then definitely you're going to enjoy this. So that's my recommendation.
That sounds like a good one, Adam. I'm planning on checking out that series, and I think we should do a review when I get around to it. I'll try to get done that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think you'll dig it. I really do. Especially the four offshoots of Batman. I think you'll really like that.
Mm.
All right, so with comic book recommendations out of the way, let's talk some news. And there's a little bit, not as much as in past weeks, but there's some to get through. So you mentioned before, we might as well start with the movies. You mentioned a new Shazam picture off air, Travis. Tell people about it.
Yeah, we were dropped the Shazam picture earlier today. I think we'll, after we're done podcasting, we'll put it up on the Facebook group.
Yeah.
For people to see just the one picture, but it's pretty awesome. Just Shazam standing there in all his glory, glowing symbol, in the amusement park. I love it. We were talking off air. I'm thoroughly excited for this movie. I just can't wait for it to get here.
Yeah, no, it's going to be, the picture looks cool. And I love how powerful and sort of, awe-inspiring Shazam looks. And that's what I like with this movie. It's showing you different sides of, in all the materials we've gotten so far, it's showing the different sides of Shazam. So the playful, childlike side, because it's a young boy in a superhero's body. But then it also shows you, the real superheroic, powerful individual. So I like this. I like the contrast of the marketing there. It's pretty cool. But we will put it on the Tales from the DC Multiverse podcast Facebook page after we're done here. And you can check it out and comment yourselves and let us know what you think about it. But I can't wait for that movie. And whenever they want to drop another trailer, I'm cool. I'm good. I'm ready.
Same.
So bring it on. We thought we were going to have it a couple weeks ago. Or about a month ago, it didn't happen. So anytime they want to put it out there, I'll be happily ready to watch it. And speaking of watching, Travis, we're going to have something to watch in the spring that's of interest to both of us. Now, I'm sure you know, as a fan of both properties, there have been so far two miniseries that have teamed up Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, Adam, and that was total amazing awesomeness.
Yes, and there is going to be a third miniseries. I think I believe it starts in May, and it's by the same creative team of James Tynion IV, who did a writing stint on Detective Comics. I did a fantastic writing stint on Detective Comics. It's going to be drawn by the same individual, Freddie Williams, the second. But the difference with this one is that it's going to also have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles co-creator, Kevin Eastman, doing some art, which is interesting, and a new twist, which I look forward to. We don't have many details on the third part, but it is going to feature Krang. So that'll be something exciting to see how Batman reacts to something like Krang. I mean, he's used to aliens in a sense of, he's dealt with Brainiac and Darkseid to some degree. But Krang is an even weirder ball of wax for him. And that reaction that Batman has will definitely, I'm sure, be interesting and probably a little bit humorous as well. So I'm excited for the third part of the crossover. But in addition to that, in the spring, we're going to get an animated film, like a direct to Blu-ray film, like the other DC animated movies. And it's called Batman vs. the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it's going to be based on the crossover material we've seen so far in the books. And I'm just over the moon about it. I've been waiting for this. Like, I don't know if you remember, maybe we've talked about it, you and I, or maybe I've said it on the previous iteration of this podcast, how one of the things that I wish they would do was this comic as an animated movie. And they're finally doing it. And I didn't expect it was ever going to happen, so I'm really happy about that. We got a couple of stills, and I love the animation style. I know this is a simple aesthetic thing, but it's cool to see Batman with not only is the yellow oval back with the black bat inside, but he's also wearing his blue costume, which I'm pretty sure in most of, aside from sort of Batman the Animated Series and Brave and the Bold, he's typically predominantly in black in these kind of things. So it's nice to see the blue, at least for me. And then the Ninja Turtle design, I love it. And I'm so happy with this design because I'm not a fan of the design in the most recent Ninja Turtles animated series. Like, that design is not my thing at all. Like, I really don't like it. So seeing the style here looks really appealing to me. And I also posted in the Facebook group the link to the announcement about this source, so you can see the picture that I posted if you go to the Facebook group. But Travis, what are your thoughts on all this?
I am super excited for this. Adam, you know me as a fan of both Ninja Turtles and Batman. The first Ninja Turtles and the first Ninja Turtles comic book was my jam. And the fact that Kevin Eastman is in on this even a little bit makes me super excited. The Batman style is somewhat similar to a couple animated things I've seen. I think Batman Unlimited.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. It's kind of, and Troy Baker's voicing the Joker and Batman. He voiced the Joker in that show as well.
Yeah.
So I that's the style that it kind of reminds me of for Batman. But we did get that one shot of the four turtles there with the two batarangs in the pole and Batman flying it like in midair coaching them. Yeah. Like, come on! I just can't wait for that. So, like you said, I'm super excited for this. I haven't watched many Ninja Turtle animated shows in a while, but the style, the animation style that the turtles are in, that was the last show that I watched in the animated version for them. So that makes me excited that it's going to be those turtles. I just look forward to this, and I want to speed time ahead a little bit for it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Plus, if we speed time, that means we would have already seen Shazam, which it's an extra bonus.
Well, we got to stop. We got to stop for that.
We'll stop. We'll watch the movie, then we'll speed up again.
There you go.
We need Barry Allen. Where is he when we need him? but, you know, in conjunction with this news, I had a good idea, and I'll share it with the listeners. I shared it with you off air. What we recently did our first episode where we actually did a long-form comic book review. We reviewed the Man of Steel miniseries that launched Brian Michael Bendis' run. That was the last episode. And so, we're going to be doing that once a month where we focus on a particular comic or graphic novel or trade paperback, whatever you prefer to call it. And so, because of this news, I thought, well, wouldn't it be awesome to, at some point here in one of those months, review the two crossovers. And what would be even cooler is if we span it over both podcasts, both this and Superhero Sci-Fi, Musings with Ryan, Adam and Ryan. And so we're going to do that. We're going to do a two-part episode where the first crossover we're going to review here on Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast, and then we're going to go over to Superheroes and Sci-Fi and review part two. So it'll be a little crossover, and looking forward to that. We haven't set dates on that yet, but we'll probably do it to coincide with the movie, and then we'll culminate it in an episode where we actually review the movie. So that's the plan, and we're looking forward to getting there and being able to do that and bring it to you.
One note on all that excites me greatly, Adam. I'm looking forward to that. But in terms of still this Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, people, I just want to implore you to go out and support this, because I have a feeling if this is anywhere near successful as most of their other animated ventures, we could get more of these crossovers, like Green Lantern and Star Trek was a comic book I really enjoyed.
Oh, yes.
That crossover, I think Brentac Prime on Twitter shared a picture of that just recently, and it reminded me of that. I think we could get something like that. There's also there's numerous other things. We could even maybe one day down the line get a Marvel DC animated crossover with like Dark Claw and other things, other like characters of that nature. So I just implore people, just even if you're not sure on this, just give it a shot, just because we may get something down the line that you do enjoy.
You know what would be cool as well, Travis? I just thought of this as you were talking. I don't know if you know, but they've done a couple DC Masters of the Universe, like the He-Man crossovers.
I was thinking that as well. I was going to ask you if they...
As a fan of both of the, you know, as a fan of He-Man as well, I would so love for that crossover to happen. There's one, I think it's called Masters of the... DC Universe versus Masters of the Universe. I think I may have reviewed it for Revenge of the Fans, I think. But... Yeah, if this is successful and it leads to that, I would love that. So I agree with you. Support this. I mean, how can you not love it? It's Batman and the Ninja Turtles.
That's not enough said.
If you don't love it, see a doctor, because something's not right.
You're dead inside.
Yeah, you have no heart. No, we're excited and we can't wait to bring those to you and talk about the books and the movie. But I think that brings the news portion to a close.
Yes.
So we have not just Gotham to review. We have Doom Patrol as well, the premiere episode. So let's get to those reviews. Let's start, as we typically do, with this past week's version or episode of Gotham. What was it about, Travis, according to the experts over at
IMDb?
Yeah.
Well, it's Legend of the Dark Knight, 13 Stitches. Gordon assembles an unlikely team to protect Gotham from Eduardo Durant's and his Delta Force. Just as Lee Tompkins resurfaces, Barbara reveals shocking news that will change Gordon's life forever. Meanwhile, Selina and Penguin team up to outsmart fellow villain Magpie.
Yeah, that's a very accurate description.
Yes.
I gotta say, I really did like this episode a lot more than last week's. The Magpie stuff, I actually quite enjoyed that. And look, I'm not a huge fan of that particular character, but look-wise, I think Gotham did her right. I think it led to a Selina and Oswald team up, which was actually really fun. Like, seeing those two interact and work together was phenomenal, because I like both actors. And I love the way, actually, Selina was really in control of that whole partnership. And I think it's unique, because Penguin always considers himself, you know, to be in control. Like, he's the quote-unquote the big mob boss, right? The kingpin, if you will, and not to cross franchises, but and so the kingpin of Gotham crime, anyway. And so to see Selina have all the power and sort of dictate the terms of their partnership was pretty impressive. And like I said. Cameron Bickendova has done a fantastic job all these years on Gotham, and she continues to move toward, you know, full-blown Catwoman as we move along here. And yeah, I just love the banter between them. Robin Lloyd Taylor is great, and no, that part of it was really impressive. So before I get into my other likes, what did you think of that aspect of the episode?
I really enjoyed that aspect of the episode as well, Adam. It gave me a lot of Batman Returns vibes just to see the two of them on screen working together.
Yeah.
I just loved that. We see her use her intelligence. She probably knew that door was free to kick open the entire time.
Yeah.
And basically play a penguin. It was nice to see. I might be a little less keen on this episode as a whole, because what's one thing that really frustrated me was Lee returning, and there was no path for me. There was nothing. I thought there was going to be a lot more grand scheme for her to be gone this long, and they basically used the exact same thing they did to Edward Nygma, and it doesn't even last one tenth of as long as what they did with Nygma. And he sorts it out. I didn't enjoy that whatsoever. But besides that, I thought this episode was fantastic.
Yeah.
And like you said, with the magpie, the way they got her in the end, I thought was fantastic. And Penguin, Selina would have just let her go with a gunshot wound, but Penguin went over and finished the job. And I loved that, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
Just so. But besides the Lee thing, that didn't pay off for me. I'm in agreement with enjoying this episode.
Yeah, I will say I agree with you on the fact that the Lee stuff really did feel like it came out of the blue. And the explanation for all of it was really rushed, I thought. But I didn't like that it's like her role was basically a retread of... First of all, I didn't like that it was a retread of what they did with Riddler, with the brainwashing. But also the fact that it was, like you said, it was dealt with so quickly that were there really, like, there's no consequences to that, because now they know how to, you know, what the issue is. They know how to remove the chip, so there's going to be no real ramifications from that.
Exactly, and they built, I got to say, a lot of the podcasts I've been listening to, basically, at one point throughout every episode, they've been asking, where's Lee? We haven't seen Lee yet. Must be something really important building up towards Lee. And we get this. So I'm hoping that there is more to do with it. That was one of my gripes. And the other gripe I'll say is it really peed me off that they showed the Jim and Barbara sex scene in the lead up to the start of the show. That kind of ruined it for me, because I kind of had a feeling what was going to happen with them come the end. Though I know it's the lore of the show, but just keep it out of it. It could have had a bit more punch for me anyway.
Oh, you're saying don't put it in the
lead up, like just before the show, like previously on. They didn't. Okay. For me when they showed that. I just thought there was no reason to show that other than there's going to be consequences of they're going to have a kid out of this now. I know that that's part of Jim Gordon has kids. That's part of the backstory of Jim Gordon. I'm just saying, I wouldn't have known that you were going to reveal it then. I didn't even think about that until you showed that to me. That's the only thing. Those are just minor gripes. But
I do like that it happened.
Same here. I love that it happened. Yeah. And I love the way that she did it too. It was so
with that attitude and that sass that she got.
It would have hit me a bit more if I didn't see that scene at the start of the previous night.
Right, because it kind of tells your brain, okay, they're going to deal with this, right?
Yeah.
But I did, like I said, the fact that we know, okay, Barbara Gordon is indeed, we might not see her, but she's going to be in this world whether we see her or not. And it is with the person that he's had her with in the comics. So I like that aspect of it. And you know what? I got to give credit to Aaron Richards, because I used to hate the Barbara character at the beginning, but each season she's really, you know, I've come around on her, and that's, I mean, part of that's writing, but part of that's also the actress doing a really good job. One of my favorite parts of the episode, though, Travis, was the fight between Jim Gordon and Ricardo / Bane. Like, I love that fight, and it wasn't just you know, Ricardo beating the crap out of Gordon. Like, Gordon held his own, and it was really a back and forth brawl kind of thing. And I like that. And you see, you know, at the end of that fight, Eduardo gets impaled, and it looks like he's going to die. And then the woman that Gordon's been talking to over the radio comes into play and sort of gives him the mask and all that. I guess, for right now, it's life support to keep him going. But I think that once Hugo Strange does whatever he's going to do to keep him alive, they're going to get into the Bane serum and all that, because they've introduced the venom serum in previous seasons, right? So I'd imagine that Hugo Strange is going to use that to not only keep him alive but make him stronger, so that the next time he has an encounter with Jim Gordon or whoever, it'll probably be, you know, him and more dominant and powerful and in control. And I like the fact that there seems to be a build-up to that. So even though, like, I'm not hot on his look, I do like what they did with him in this episode. I thought it was very well done.
I cannot agree more. I enjoyed the back and forth when Jim Gordon is basically saying, your recklessness caused so many of our team members to die. And you could see that he got so pissed off he wanted to fight him right away. I have a question involving that whole thing to you. Question/theory. Do you think that Walker could be Gotham's Amanda Waller? Or she could even become Amanda Waller? Because we've only seen her, she was a secretary. We've only seen her in the background just talking. This is only the first season, really, that we've seen her, or she's come to play. And she's basically trying to stage a coup and get rid of all the villains in Gotham. And she's controlling Eduardo and turning him into a villain. Maybe this could be the first stages of the idea that she gets for the Suicide Squad. I know that's completely side thing, but maybe that's where they got this inspiration for this character, because I got a lot of Amanda Waller vibes watching her especially talk to somebody, and we find out that she went in with her government agents and saved him from that prison. And when her home government would not, so maybe this is like a black ops side. Maybe she had a black ops like crew that she went and done missions for, and that's just how this snowballs out of that. And that's just the vibe I got while seeing her.
Yeah,
it just reminded me of Amanda Waller, and I just thought maybe this is where they got inspiration from, because she is so heartless and cold, and I was loving her character just when we seen her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they'll ever go full blown and make her.
Yeah, I doubt that we'll see Suicide Squad or we'll see Amanda Waller, but I just think maybe. Do you think they got the inspiration from?
Certainly, it definitely looks that way. Yeah, for sure. You can definitely see parallels, so I think that's a good call on your part.
Okay.
But yeah, so those are my thoughts on the episode. Let's give it a grade. What would you grade this episode?
I'll give this episode a 4 out of 5, Adam. I enjoyed it. I gotta say, I love that Nygma has his use of his brain back. And with all his glory, we didn't even mention the bomb setup that he had that was fantastic. That Harvey would know the math problem. Yeah. Of course. But
yeah, you never expect that. That was surprising, yeah.
That was good, but I love this episode, and I'm hoping we'll get more Enigma scheming and stuff now that he has full control of his mind again. I'm excited as hell for that. So 4 out of 5 for me, and we're gearing up. We only have, what, four or five episodes left? Oh, yeah. Baby.
That's going to be good. I'll give it I'll go with a letter grade because I'm used to that. I'll give it an A-. You know, I had little inconsistencies with what we talked about with the Lee stuff. Mm. But other than that, I thought it was a really solid episode, and they did some really good stuff with the Bane character. So yeah, that's my rating on that. Let's move on to Doom Patrol, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
All right, give us the description.
Let's get the description for Doom Patrol here, Adam. I got to say, just right off the bat, I love that it was a 58-minute pilot.
Oh, yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, boy, this is a full-on... This is a full-on almost hour. Yeah, it was great.
I see they phoned it in here.
Oh, one sentence.
Yeah. After a severe accident, Cliff Steele wakes up a changed man in the house of Dr. Niles Calder and his Doom Patrol.
Wow. They went wrong. I mean, they're not wrong.
It's no, just, they're not, but it's just, there's so much more.
Yeah. Look, I'll start us off. I really love this show. This premiere, this pilot, whatever you want to call it. I want to give some background because while I enjoyed the one episode, you know, where they appeared on Titans, like I enjoyed the episode, but I have not, you know, I'd be lying to everybody if I said, oh, I'm a huge Doom Patrol fan. That's not the case at all. In fact, I tried the comic book several times, and it just didn't do anything for me. Like, I couldn't get into it. And so, when I saw the episode in Titans, I said, well, okay, well, it was good. But and then I heard that it was getting its own spinoff. And I'm like, ah, I mean, you know, that'll be good content. I'll watch it because it's DC. But, you know, if you ask me what was my excitement level for some of the shows they announced, I was far more excited for, you know, Young Justice and the Swamp Thing and the Stargirl show than I was for the announcement of Doom Patrol getting its own show. Having said all that, oh boy, this was... This blew me away in terms of how much I actually like it. And here's what I love about it. You don't need any knowledge of Doom Patrol to follow along with this episode. You don't even have to have watched the Titans episode. So that's a good way to get people that have never heard of it or don't have much exposure to these characters into the swing of things. The other thing I liked was, I love the fact that I had that narration by Alan Tudyk's character.
Yeah.
That narration.
Eric Morden.
Yeah. But it felt like a lot of... it reminded me a bit of Deadpool in that sense. You know what I mean? Did you get that vibe too?
A little bit, yeah. He was like funny, more ironic about the situations. Yeah, I get what you're saying there.
Yeah. And I like the fact that what the episode is essentially does is it gives you... You know, the core essential, you know, aspects of each character's origin that you need. Like, each character gets a mini origin in this episode. And I mean, that's essentially the bulk of the episode. And they, what I loved about it was they give you just enough of each person's origin to, I think, get invested in all the main Doom Patrol characters. I really do believe that. Now, granted, I have, you know, some stood out more to me than others. Like, to me, the standouts were... The two characters that I really gravitated towards were Robot Man, obviously, and Crazy Jane.
Agreed.
Those are my two favorites. Now, in saying that, the origin vignette for the Negative Man, Matt Bomer's character,
Larry Trainer,
right? Yeah. Did you not get vibes a little bit of Green Lantern with him being a test pilot? Or...
Yeah, and that ship that he had, the design, fantastic on a small budget, like Doom Patrol is. I just loved that. I thought it looked so sleek and modern. For, you know, that this is the first kind of time they're trying space flight, so you know they're going to be modern designs like that. So I just loved it. I thought it was fantastic, just everything they did with his origin. And then to peel back the layers after a while, because you thought at first it was just a normal family dynamic. He was just a cool dude. The way they made him out to be was he was a ladies' man.
Yeah.
He was like, and then you find out that no, he had a secret other life, and all this stuff.
Yeah,
that just fantastic, Adam. Fantastic.
Yeah, and like to go back to the, you know, the visuals when he, when he's in space and he gets hit by the negative energy, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's what we'll call it.
the negative. I don't want to call it a cloud because every time you say cloud and superhero shows or movies, it brings about negative connotations. But like you said, for the budget of Doom Patrol, if you assume whatever it is, it's streaming, so it can't be astronomical. It looked really, really good. Mm-hmm. And the even the origin of the girl, what was her name, the actress?
Rita Farr.
Yes. That was kind of, it had like a gruesome kind of horror-esque vibe to it. It kind of sets the table for what we might see on Swamp Thing, if you think about it.
Oh, I do. It I think that just setting the bar even higher.
Like, I'm not too familiar with Doom Patrol, so I'm not 100% sure what that, you know, when she's drowning. I don't know what that, I'm going to call it the green fart mist, because I don't know what it is. but that was kind of like, oh, I don't know what's going on there, but, you know, it's a little bit of, it was interesting for sure. But and then, like I said, I just loved how insane Crazy Jane was. And like the idea that her, like she has multiple personalities, and I think they, each one might have a different ability.
Yeah, you're right there.
Yeah.
I think 64?
Something along those lines, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
And all I kept thinking was, this character kind of reminds me of, do you know who, Legion is from the X-Men?
No.
Okay, anyway, it's Professor X's son.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know him. I haven't watched the show yet.
Yeah, no, but just general from the comics, how it's Professor X's son, and he has multiple personalities, and each one has a different... So it reminded me of that a little bit, in that kind of sense. But, yeah, she was great. The actress was great, and it's funny because that actress is going to be voicing... Diane Guerrero, she's going to also be voicing Jessica Cruz on the Justice League versus the Fatal Five, the animated movie.
Yeah.
So that's a cool, you know, DC connection going further. But to me, before I get to him, I really like Timothy Dalton as the Chief. Much better. Like I said, seeing him and him acting the role was much better than whoever they had in the Titans one-off episode. He just adds, because it's Timothy Dalton and he's so well-known and he's got this illustrious career, his presence adds a sense of legitimacy to the whole thing and believability to the whole thing. Like, when all this crazy stuff is coming out of his mouth, because it's coming out of his mouth, you just go along with it and believe it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like whenever you put Patrick Stewart in anything. You just believe anything he's saying. But with all that said, of everything I liked about the other characters, hands down, my favorite character right now after one episode is Robot Man, Brendan Fraser, his character. Because even they give a sense of, like, when the pilot opens and you see, like, you know, he's this big shot race car driver, and they show his home, and it's a fancy home. You think, well, this guy's got the life, he's got the wife, he's got the kid, he's got the career that, you know, everybody would love to have. And then it's Brendan Fraser, and we're used to Brendan Fraser, you know, from The Mummy and from the, you know, the Encino Man. And like, so he's got this kind of sense of, especially from The Mummy, from like, he's a good natured guy. So that's the vibe you've always gotten off of Brendan Fraser. But then to see like beyond all that, like underneath all that, like he's having sex with the maid or the babysitter. Whatever, was she the maid or the babysitter? I'm not even.
The maid.
A bit of both. And
the nanny, sorry.
Yeah, the nanny, sorry. And his wife is like, his wife, and he's got a bit of a drinking issue, right? And then his wife is always taunting him and like at the racetrack car, like she's flirting with one of his pit crew and all that stuff.
I'm going to interject there. I wouldn't say always. That was kind of shown as a retaliation for his cheating.
No,
she's the victim here. Let's not.
Definitely. Okay. But the fact that she would, like, the fact that she used that to get back at him, kind of thing. Like, it goes against the perception of what they set up at the beginning, where it's this fancy house, this great career. You know what I mean? Like, so it really throws that perception, like, totally out of whack. And then, so at first you're kind of like, man, this guy's an ass, right? This guy's a douchebag. But then, like, you see, they kind of reconcile. And then you see bits of the accident. And I love the way they show the accident, where you don't get the full picture right away. Like, you see it in pieces. And then, so then it cuts to, you know, he's getting sort of saved by the chief. And so you go through that process of he's being sort of reacclimated to the world. You get to learn that, you know, basically only his brain survived. And, you know, he tells him the story of, well, you know, everybody, your family died and you're the only survivor. But then you find out that was a lie, that his daughter survived. And so, but the great thing about this is that even though they set him up to be this jackass at the beginning, throughout the episode, they kind of redeem him and they show him, like, as he's learning to walk in robot form, and he's envisioning this memory he had of you know, walking up the stairs with his daughter, and that gets him through the hardship of learning how to walk as a robot. That pulled at your heartstrings. Like, that whole sequence, like, I was almost tearing up watching it. And then when you find out, you know, that his daughter is alive, it's like, oh wow, like that. And I wonder if they're gonna play on. Like, I wonder if he's gonna interact with her.
I wouldn't say they wouldn't drop all that. Of him interacting with her.
And you know what was cool is the fact that he may be the most like, tortured soul of the bunch in a way, but yet he was the most heroic. Like, when it came down to it, at the very end, right? He was the one who was like, no, we're going to stay and we're going to protect this city, this town. And he was the one leading the charge on that. And I love that. I'm just and like the fact that they used an actual like a physical robot like the you know, instead of all CGI, I thought was a smart move, because that looked really good. Like, he looked great. I don't know what your thoughts on it, but
I thought he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for you to finish to
go nuts, dive deep.
You're just speaking to the choir, man. Everything, I can't echo your sentiments enough. But Robot Man, I like how his personality grew over the years, because when we saw him in Titans, he was a fully established, like,
right.
Lived through the years, and he displayed, I gotta give the producers, the writers extra credit, because he displayed the same kind of humor and personality in the Titans episode that he did in the back half of this Doom Patrol episode. He was the one, like, talking to Gar. He was the one worried about what Chief would think. He was the one making jokes. He was the one complaining that he couldn't touch anything or feel like taste food or anything. And in this pilot, we get to grow with him and see him, like, get to that point. So we don't just pick up right where we left off with Titans. We get the backstory for the first half hour, which I thought just fantastic. This is how you do a pilot. I absolutely loved it. Like you said, Timothy Dalton, after 1 minute of Timothy Dalton on screen, I completely forgot about whoever played the chief in that Titans episode, because Timothy, he's not good enough. No offense, but just in my opinion, he's not a good enough actor to tie Timothy Dalton's shoes or clean or let's just say, greases wheelchair wheels.
That's fair, yeah.
Because in 1 minute, I was the complaint I had about the Chief in the Titans episode that he was so heartless and so cold. It didn't seem like he cared about those people at all. It seemed like he wanted to control them more than care for them. But in this episode, within a minute and a half, I didn't get that feeling at all. I you could tell how much the Chief cared for every one of those people. Yeah. In each of their interactions. Like you said about the three origin stories, fantastic. Each one was so good. Like you said about the Robot Man, oh my God, he's so hilarious now, but I don't even know how he could be after what happened. And we find out that he basically invented fake memories to shield himself from the tragedy. He thought first that that car actually hit him, but we find out later that's not exactly what happens. And like you said, pulled out the heartstrings, punch in the gut. It's just so bad. And then it just flash forwards to present day, and he's hilarious. So you got to pick up with that and go on and still carry that little gut punch that you know. And then there's another one when he finds out that his daughter's alive. So, like you, Robot Man was my favorite. He was my favorite in the Titans episode as well. But just fantastic. I could go on and on about all these characters, but they all had just enough time to shine that, like you said, made me care about each one.
I want to ask you specifically, okay, actually, before I ask you that, I want to just comment on what you were saying about Robot Man's comedy. What I love about it is that the show, like, sort of balanced the tone so that it was equally, there were humorous moments, but they weren't forcing themselves to be funny. You know what I mean? It wasn't.
Oh, you're 100% on, especially the way they pull our emotions around, like we were talking about before we record it. At 1 minute you're laughing, 1 minute you're right. Like, oh man, another minute you're scared, another minute it's all over the place. And I love that in a show, especially in a pilot episode, because we're just getting introduced to these characters. And if you're making me care that much for these characters in 58 minutes,
but like, there was a balance between humor and taking himself seriously.
Yes, like you could not have been more right on that, Adam.
It was an equal balance. And that's, just for me personally, that's the difference between this show and why I'm not so hard on Legends of Tomorrow anymore.
Oh, and that's to each their own. Sometimes some people, like myself, like to, I'll just say, like to inhibit my brain, sit back, and watch Legends and laugh.
Yeah.
So I can see the two points.
That's just me saying why I'm not so keen.
Oh, yeah, and you're perfectly.
I think they've gone too far over with the comedy, whereas here there's a balance between.
Oh, you're perfectly in the right to say that, and I wouldn't argue against that, because it has gone through the absurd. I enjoy absurdity, but this is a much more grounded show and a much more, like, there's stakes, there's consequences for your actions, like the Chief says, and I won't ever say Legends is nowhere near this kind of show.
No, but, and so, the other thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, because we touched on it in the beginning, but we didn't. It was more to talk about the voiceover. What did you think of Mr. Nobody, played by Alan Tudyk?
Loved him, Adam, and kind of. We didn't get much of him, only his voice, which was good because it gives him an ominous presence when he does arrive.
Yeah.
And I love how, not only did he use that, what are we calling it, green fart bubble, to convey the slogan that he was said, like, tattooed when he became Mr. Nobody. We also see from in my opinion anyway, from his interactions with the Chief, he previously went to the Chief for help.
Yeah.
After this happened to him. Because it kind of seemed like him and the Chief had a relationship beforehand.
It's almost, you know what it reminds me of? Not exactly, but similar, I'm getting similar vibes. It could be, I mean, this could be revealed later, and I know nothing, like I said, I know next to nothing about Doom Patrol, other than that I tried to read it and I couldn't get through it. But could it be possible that they have sort of a past relationship similar to Professor X and Magneto?
I was thinking that too, but I recall Alan Tudyk's Eric Morden saying that he was a nobody, he was just a henchman. low-level, but maybe he did. What I'm thinking is maybe he came to, he could have came to the chief before he went to this guy, and asked the chief for the same thing. Like, can you help me? I want to get powers. I want to get stronger. And the chief probably just sent away. This is what happened to him. That's the only thing, only guess I can bring to myself. But even if that's not the case, if he went to the chief for help afterwards, you can still get that sort of adversarial friendship. Because maybe, let's just say, Mr. Nobody was his first person that he tried to help. Because this was Nazi Germany when this happened. So maybe this is the first person that he tried to help, and it went awry. And maybe he struggled with the decision to help people again afterwards, and then came on and started over again. Yeah. So I don't know. We don't know exactly what place and time the chief encounters each of these people yet. So we'll get those blanks filled in. But I really think that could be a possibility. And I loved it.
His origin, when he goes into that machine and gets broken apart, didn't that remind you of Dr. Manhattan?
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I'm so glad I had that written down and exclamation points. I was just about to ask you that. I'm so glad that you had those same thoughts.
Yeah, I know, it was great. I'm like, hey, Watchmen reference, even though.
Yeah, that's how I took it anyway.
It probably wasn't on purpose, but I'm gonna pretend it was. And I like the effect of how they showed him, like the little bit we did see. That effect, again, the effects in this, like between Mr. Nobody and Rita Farr's character, when she goes all gooey and yucky and sort of brain matter kind of look. That was disgusting in a good way, I'll say. So that was great. I love it. To me, you know what it feels like? Here's my sort of, if I had to put a tagline on it, it would be like, imagine if the X-Men were sort of spliced together with the Munsters. You remember the Munsters? You ever hear the Munsters?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Do you get that vibe? Because it's got the humor and the weirdness of that, but it's also got a little bit of X-Men there. Yeah.
I get sort of a X-Men, Addams Family vibe. Yeah,
well, the Munsters are kind of like the Addams Family too. Same
X-Men,
like that.
Addams Family plus HBO.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I get that. So.
Yeah, like I kind of get that kind of feeling with where the show is. Like, they dropped the F-bomb several times throughout the show.
Well, and there's sex too, which is.
I didn't even care. I thought that it all went perfect with the show. Yeah. Like the reactions when they did say the F-word, I thought that's what would probably have been said in those interactions. So I loved it. And the banter and the jokes between the characters, like, it just makes me enjoy. And that's the kind of reason that I enjoy, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy and teams like that, because you know that they care for each other, but they still make fun and poke and laugh. And it's just what I enjoy.
And there's one joke I do want to call out when they were doing Rita's origin story. And Mr. Nobody's doing the voiceover, and he says, well, critics called her the poor man so-and-so, or the rich man's whatever actress he threw out. And he goes, but what do critics know? He goes, they're going to hate this show anyway. I was dying.
And the ironic thing is, I'm pretty sure critics are, like, universally praising this show to start.
But that just had me rolling. I love that.
Can I jump on one thing, because we're touching on that? I got a question for you. What did you think about Rita's, not her origin story per se, more than the light that she was painted in? I thought it wasn't very, like, her personality wasn't very good, and we got a second display of that when she's in the diner, and the girl is saying, like, telling her that watching those movies was so memorable when her father was sick, like, they were watching them together, and Rita asked to tell me more. And the girl assumes, like we all would, that she's talking about her father. But no, Rita just wants to hear how much that she loved those movies and Rita.
No, yeah, there is a little bit of self-centeredness there, for sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think they show you that there's more to her by her reaction to Robot Man when he starts being able to walk up the stairs.
Agreed.
So there is, I think there's going to be character growth with her, where you see her evolve into not being self-centered.
I like that take, Adam. I think that that's probably the way they're going to go, that she won't care about what people think when they look at her, because we all know that that's the main,
And you see that at the end when she's starting to go, like, you know, goopy. And then, like, I have no term for it, so I'm just going to call it that. But, I think it was Robama that looks over to her. She goes, "Don't worry, it's fine, it's okay." So, almost like she's like, "I don't care anymore what people think." And so I think it's going there. But again, I like that these characters aren't fully formed and there's room for growth, where you're going to see them grow and evolve and stuff. So I can't say enough good things about this premiere episode. I can't wait for each week to come so that we can talk about the show, and I can't wait to see where they go from here. But is there anything else you want to call out, or we can?
I just want to say that I enjoyed the interactions with Chief and the group in the present day. They're really funny. When he left, Robot Man saying bye, Dad.
Yeah,
I actually laughed out loud when I heard that.
Yeah,
and it just thrown in there. I really enjoyed it, and I can't agree more with everything you said. I'm so glad you're not reviewing this on your column, because we get to talk about it here on this podcast.
Well, I have so much to do on the column, so it's nice to
devote like a 40 or 50 minute time slot to each episode, because if they're anything like this pilot, they're going to deserve it, because this was fantastic. And just one more thing before we go off, I'm going to be doing two other podcasts on this pilot this week. Oh, I'm going to be joining the DC Drop tomorrow, and I'm going to be joining Katie from Wobam on Thursday.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I couldn't say no to each.
Yeah, sure. Hey, man, talk about it as much as you want. It's a great show, and we want to spread the word. Watch this show, and I love Titans and I love this, so if this keeps to be the trend of DC shows, then especially on the streaming service or the Warner Brothers streaming service when that comes out, it's only good. Like, I just bring them all on. More, I want more, give me more. But yeah, let's go ahead and rate this show. So what would be your rating, Travis?
I'm going to go to letter grade, since you went to the letter grade department. I'm going to give it a triple plus.
Yeah. I mean,
one plus is not enough.
Yeah, can't go wrong. This is great. I found zero problems with it. It's an A plus for me. And like I said, bring on episode 2. But that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Travis mentioned that he's going to be appearing on 2 podcasts. I have a scheduled appearance on the MVP movie podcast with Steven and his brother Dan coming up. We're going to be talking about all things Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's more of a broad strokes discussion on all things from movies to animation to comics. So I'm looking forward to that. Love those guys over there, and they do great stuff. So I'm happy to lend my voice to their show. Aside from that, if people want to find you, Travis, and just talk to you about this stuff on social media, where can they do that?
Well, before I give them that, I just got to say, you told me about this a couple of days ago, that podcast, and you have to let me know immediately when it drops. Going to go to the top of my listen, because I love everything Ninja Turtles, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it, man. I'm so excited.
Definitely will. I'm excited to record it, yeah.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can drop me a line, and we can chat DC or pretty much anything superhero related. And I do a small podcast on Anchor called Superhero Discussions, just to talk about mainly the DCCW shows that me and Adam don't cover on this podcast.
Which we will eventually in broader.
We'll be doing season reviews of all the shows. Don't you worry, kids.
Yeah. All right. So definitely follow Travis over there and then and listen to all that stuff and talk to him on Twitter. And if you want to bash the Montreal Canadiens while you're at it, go for it. Well, we like that kind of stuff here on this podcast. But if you want to follow me, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. We mentioned the Facebook group before, Tales from DC Multiverse, the podcast, the Facebook group. You can go there. You can send a request to join the podcast, or the group, sorry. We will add you, and then we can continue the discussion over there if Facebook is more your thing. And also, I ask you to go over to revengeofthefans.com for my Tales from the DC Multiverse articles, where I cover exclusively the Arrowverse shows, and I talk about those, so you can get my thoughts on those episode by episode over there. And also listen to some of the other podcasts from the Revenge of the Fans podcast network. You know, you got Mario doing The Fanboy, where he often drops DC nuggets of information and little tidbits he's hearing. He calls it bochinche, and I guess is the term that he uses, which I've come to enjoy that term. So, you know.
Dude's been on fire the last couple months.
Yeah.
Scoops and the information. And I always say, I thoroughly enjoy Mario because he doesn't put out anything unless he's darn well certain of his sources.
And then,
he's not just going for clicks.
And then he's got another one, it's called The Revengers, which is basically him and two other hosts, where they do a news recap and talk about the news in a more, you know, the official news capacity. So check that one out. And I want to call attention to another one, the Fanboy Garage with Aaron Varola and Chris Losanti. Recently they did an episode devoted to all things wrestling. So if you're a wrestling fan and you want to hear about that, definitely check that one out as well. And then also, in addition to Revenge of the Fan stuff, we'd like to remind you that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network. So if you're all Batman all the time kind of guy or gal, head over to that site and check out all the podcasts available there as well. But that's it. That wraps up this week. We hope you enjoyed it. We enjoyed recording it and talking about both Gotham and Doom Patrol. Until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week or a wonderful weekend, depending on when you're listening to this here podcast. But until then, so long, everybody.
Later, guys.